Osho, My Way, The Way of the White Clouds. Discourse number 3. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Baba, you once told us a beautiful story about a very old man who was over 100 years old. And one day, on his birthday, he was asked why it was that he was always happy. And he replied, every morning when I wake up, I have the choice to be happy or unhappy, and I choose to be happy. How is it that we usually choose to be unhappy? How is it that we don't usually feel aware of the choice? We're not even sure what our ego is.
This is one of the most complex human problems. It has to be considered very deeply. And it is not theoretical. It concerns you. This is how everybody is behaving, always choosing the wrong, always choosing the sad, the depressed, the miserable. There must be profound reasons for it, and there are. First thing, the way human beings are brought up plays a very definite role in it. If you are unhappy, you gain something out of it. You always gain. If you are happy, you always lose. From the very beginning, an alert child starts feeling the distinction. Whenever he is unhappy, everybody is sympathetic towards him. He gains sympathy. Everybody tries to be loving towards him. He gains love. And even more than that, whenever he is unhappy, everybody is attentive towards him. He gains attention. And attention works like a food for the ego. A very alcoholic stimulant. It gives you energy. You feel you are somebody. Hence so much need, so much desire to get attentions. If everybody is looking at you, you become important. If nobody is looking at you, you feel as if you are not there. You are no more. You are a non-being. People looking at you, people caring about you, give you energy. The ego exists in relationship. More people pay attention to you, more you gain ego. If nobody looks at you, the ego dissolves. If everybody has completely forgotten you, how the ego can exist? How you can feel you are? Hence the need of society, associations, clubs. All over the world, clubs exist, Rotary, Lion, Masonic lodges, and millions of clubs and societies. These societies and clubs exist only to give attention to people who cannot get attention in other ways. It is difficult to become a president of a country. It is difficult to become a mayor of a corporation. It is easier to become the president of a Lions Club. And a particular gift gives you attention. You are very important. Doing nothing. Lions Club, Rotary Club, doing nothing at all. But still they feel they are something important. And the president goes on moving. This year one, another year another. And everybody gets attention. It is a mutual arrangement. And everybody feels important. From the very beginning, the child learns the politics. The politics is look miserable. Then you get sympathy. Then everybody is attentive. Look ill. You become important. An ill child becomes dictatorial. The whole family has to follow him. Whatsoever he says is the rule. When he is happy, nobody listens to him. When he is healthy, nobody cares about him. When he is perfect, nobody is attentive. From the very beginning, we start choosing the miserable, the sad, the pessimist, the darker side of life. Do one thing. And second, a related thing with it is, whenever you are happy, whenever you are joyful, whenever you feel ecstatic and blissful, everybody is jealous of you. Jealousy means everybody is antagonistic. Nobody is friendly at that moment. Everybody is an enemy. So you have learned not to be so ecstatic that everybody becomes inimical towards you. Not to sow your bliss. Not to laugh. Look at people when they laugh. They laugh very calculatedly. It is not a belly laugh. It is not coming from their very depth of being. They look first at you, then they judge, and then they laugh. And they laugh to a particular extent, the extent you will tolerate, the extent which will not be taken amiss. The extent where nobody will become jealous. Even our smiles are political. And laughter has disappeared. And bliss has become absolutely unknown. And to be ecstatic is almost impossible because it is not allowed. If you are miserable, nobody will think you are mad. If you are ecstatic and dancing, everybody will think you are mad. Dance is rejected. Singing is not accepted. A blissful man, and we think something has gone wrong. What type of society is this? If someone is miserable, everything is okay. He fits. Because the whole society is miserable. More or less. He is a member. He belongs to us. If somebody goes ecstatic, we think he has gone berserk. Insane. He doesn't belong to us. And we feel jealous. Because of jealousy, we condemn him. Because of jealousy, we will try in every way to put him back to his old state. And we call that old state normality. Psychoanalysts will help, psychiatrists will help to bring that man to the normal misery. In the West, the whole society is turning against psychedelics. The law, the state, the government, the legal experts, the high courts, the legislators, priests, popes, everybody turning against. They are not really against psychedelics. They are against of people being ecstatic. They are not against alcohol. They are not against other things which are drugs, but against psychedelics, because psychedelics can create a chemical change in you. And the old crust that the society has created around you, the imprisonment in misery, can be broken. There can be a breakthrough. You can come out of it, even for a few moments, and be ecstatic. Society cannot allow ecstasy. Ecstasy is the greatest revolution. I repeat it. Ecstasy is the greatest revolution. If people become ecstatic, the whole society will have to change. Because this society is based on misery. If people are blissful, you cannot lead them to war, to Vietnam, or to Egypt, or to Israel. No. Someone who is blissful will just laugh and say, this is nonsense. If people are blissful, you cannot make them obsessed with money. They will not waste their whole lives just accumulating money. It will look madness to them that a person destroying his whole life and just exchanging his life with dead money, dying and accumulating money, and the money will be there and he will be dead. This is absolute madness. But this madness cannot be seen unless you are ecstatic. If people are ecstatic, then the whole pattern of this society will have to change. This society exists on misery. Misery has great investment for this society. So we bring up children. From the very beginning, we create a leaning towards misery. That's why they always choose. In the morning, for everybody, there is choice. Not in the morning, really, every moment, there is choice to be miserable or to be happy. And you always choose to be miserable because there is investment. You always choose to be miserable because that has become a habit, a pattern. You have always done that. You have become efficient in doing it. It has become a track. The moment your mind has to choose, it immediately flows towards misery. It looks downhill. Ecstasy looks uphill. It looks very difficult to reach. But it is not so. The real thing is quite the opposite. Ecstasy is downhill. Misery is uphill. Misery is a very difficult thing to achieve, but you have achieved it and you have done the impossible. Because misery is so anti-nature. Nobody wants to be miserable and everybody is miserable. The society has done a great job. The education, the culture, and the culturing agencies, parents, teachers, they have done a great job. They have made miserable creatures out of ecstatic creators. Every child is born ecstatic. Every child is born a god, and every man dies just a madman. Unless you recover, unless you reclaim your childhood, you will not be able to become white clouds I am talking about. And this is the whole work for you, the whole sadhana, how to regain childhood, how to reclaim. If you can become children again, then there is no misery. I don't mean that for a child there are no moments of misery. There are. But still there is no misery. Try to understand this. A child can become miserable. He can be unhappy, intensely unhappy in a moment. But he is so total in that unhappiness. He is so one with that unhappiness that there is no division. The child separate from unhappiness is not there. The child is not looking at his unhappiness separate, divided. The child is unhappiness. He is so involved in it. And when you become one with unhappiness, unhappiness is not unhappiness. If you become so one with it, even that has a beauty of its own. So look at a child, an unspoiled child, I mean. He is angry, then his whole energy becomes anger. Nothing is left behind. No hold up. He has moved and become anger. There is nobody manipulating and controlling it. There is no mind. The child has become anger. He is not angry. He has become the anger. And then see the beauty, the flowering of anger. The child never looks ugly. Even in anger, he looks beautiful. Just he looks more intense, more vital, more alive. A volcano ready to erupt. Such a small child with such a great energy. Such an atomic being with a full whole universe to explode. And after this anger, the child will be silent. After this anger, the child will be very peaceful. After this anger, the child will relax. We may think it is to be very miserable in that anger, but the child is not miserable. He has enjoyed it. If you become one with anything, you become blissful. If you separate yourself from anything, even if it is happiness, you will become miserable. So this is the key. To be separate as an ego is the base of all misery. To be one, to be flowing with whatsoever life brings to you, to be in it so intensely total that you are no more, you are lost, then everything is blissful. The choice is there. You have even become unaware of the choice. You have been choosing so continuously the wrong, it has become such a dead habit. You simply choose it automatically. There is no choice left. Become alert. Each moment when you are choosing to be miserable, remember, this is your choice. Even this mindfulness will help, this alertness that this is my choice and I am responsible and this is what I am doing to myself. This is my doing. immediately you will feel a difference. The quality of the mind has changed. It will be easier for you to move towards happiness. And once you know that this is your choice, the whole thing has become a game. Then if you love to be miserable, be miserable. But remember, this is your choice. And don't complain. There is nobody else who is responsible for it. This is your drama. If you like this way, if you like it in a miserable way, if you want to pass through life in misery, then this is your choice, your game. You are playing it. Play it well. But then don't go and ask people how to be not miserable. That is absurd. Then don't go and ask masters and gurus how to be happy. The so-called gurus exist because you are foolish. You create the misery and then you go and ask others how to uncreate it. And you will go on creating because you are not alert what you are doing. From this very moment, try to be happy and blissful. I will tell you one of the deepest laws of life. You may not have thought about it at all. You have heard. The whole science depends on it. That cause and effect is the base. You create the cause and the effect follows. The life is a causal link. You put the seed in the soil and it will sprout. If the cause is there, then the tree will follow. The fire is there, you put your hand in it and it will burn. The cause is there and the effect will follow. You take poison and you will die. You arrange for the cause and then the effect follows. This is one of the most basic scientific laws, that cause and effect is the innermost link of all processes of life. Religion knows about a second law and is still deeper than this. But the second law, which is deeper than this, if you don't know and experiment with it, will look absurd. Religion says, produce the effect and the cause follows. This is absolutely absurd in scientific terms. Science says if the cause is there, the effect follows. Religion says the otherwise is also true. You create the effect and see the cause follows. There is a situation in which you feel happy. A friend has come, a beloved has called. A situation is the cause. You feel happy. Happiness is the effect. The coming of the beloved is the cause. The religion says be happy and the beloved comes. Create the effect and the cause follows. And this is my own experience, that the second law is more basic than the first. I have been doing it and it has been happening. You just be happy and the beloved comes. You just be happy and friends are there. You just be happy and everything follows. Jesus says in different words the same thing. He says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, then all else will follow. But the kingdom of God is the end, the effect. Seek ye first the end. End means the effect, the result, and the cause will follow. And this should be so. Not only that you place a seed in the soil and the tree follows. Let there be a tree and there are millions of seeds. If cause is followed by effect, effect is again followed by cause, this is the chain. Then it becomes a circle. Start from anywhere. Create the cause or create the effect. And I tell you, it is easier to create the effect. Because the effect depends totally upon you. The cause may not be so dependent on you. If I say when a certain friend is there, only then I can be happy. Then it depends on a certain friend, whether he is there or not. If I say that until I achieve this much wealth, I cannot be happy, then it depends on the whole world and the economic situations and everything. It may not happen, and then I cannot be happy. Cause is beyond me. Effect is within me. Cause is in the surroundings, in the situations. Cause is without. Effect is me. If I can create the effect, the cause will follow. Choose happiness. That means you are choosing the effect and then see what happens. Choose ecstasy and then see what happens. Choose to be blissful and see what happens. Your whole life will change immediately. And you will see miracles happening around you. Because now you have created the effect and causes will have to follow. This will look magical. You can even call it the law of the magic. The first is the law of science and the second is the law of magic. And religion is magic. And you can be the magician. And that's what I teach you, to be the magician, to know the secret of the magic. Try it. You have been trying the other your whole life, not only this, many other lives also. Now listen to me. Try this magical formula. This mantra I give to you. Create the effect and see what happens. Causes immediately surround you. They follow. And don't wait for the causes. You have waited long enough. Choose happiness and you will be happy. What is the problem? Why you can't choose? Why you can't work on this law? Because your mind, the old mind which has been trained by scientific thinking, says that if you are not happy and you try to be happy, that happiness will be artificial. If you are not happy and you try to be happy, that will be just active. That will not be real. This is what scientific thinking says. That will not be real. You will be just active. But you don't know. Life energy has its own ways of work. If you can act totally, it will become the real. The only thing is the actor must not be there. Move totally in it, then there is no difference. If you are acting half-heartedly, then it will remain artificial. If I say to you, dance and sing and be blissful, and you try half-heartedly, just to see what happens, but you remain behind. And you go on looking that this is just artificial, I am trying, but this is not coming, this is not spontaneous. Then it will remain active. A waste of time. If you try, then try wholeheartedly. Don't remain behind. Move into it. Become the acting. Dissolve the actor into acting and then see what happens. It will become the real. And then you will feel it is spontaneous. You have not done it. You will know then that it has happened. But unless you are total, this cannot be so. Create the effect be in it completely and see and observe the results. I can make you kings without kingdoms. Only you have to act like a king. And act so totally that even a real king will appear just acting before you. And then the whole energy has moved into it. It has become reality. Energy makes anything real. And if you wait for kingdoms, they never come. Even for a Napoleon, for an Alexander, who had big kingdoms, they never came. They remained miserable. Because they didn't come to realize the second and the more basic and primal law of life. Alexander is trying to create a bigger kingdom to become a bigger king. The whole life is wasted in creating the kingdom, and there is no space left to be the king, no time left. He died before the kingdom was complete. And this has happened to many. The kingdom can never be complete. The world is infinite. Your kingdom is bound to remain partial. And with a partial kingdom, how can you be a total king? Your kingdom is bound to be limited. And with a limited kingdom, how you can be the emperor? It is impossible. But you can be the emperor. Just create the effect. Swami Ram, one of the mystics of this century, went to America, and he used to call him Bhasa Ram, Emperor Ram. And he was a beggar. Somebody asked him that you are just a beggar, but you go on calling yourself the emperor. So Ram said, "Don't look at my things. Look at me." And he was right. Because if you look at things, then everybody is a beggar. Even an emperor. Maybe a bigger beggar, that's all. But look at me. In that moment, Ram was the emperor. You could have looked and the emperor was there. Create the effect, become the emperor, be a magician. And from this very moment, because there is no need to wait, one has to wait if the kingdom has to come first. If the cause has to be created first, then one has to wait and wait and wait and postpone. To create the effect, there is no need to wait. You can be the emperor this very moment. When I say be, just be the emperor and see the kingdom follows. I have known it through my experience. I am not talking to you it as a theory or a doctrine. Be happy. And in that peak of happiness, you will see the whole world is happy with you. There is an old saying, weep and you weep alone. Laugh and the whole world laughs with you. Even the trees, the rocks, the sand, the clouds, if you can create the effect and be ecstatic, they all will dance with you. Then the whole existence becomes a dance, a celebration. But it depends on you. If you can create the effect. And I say to you, you can create it. It is the easiest thing possible. Looks very difficult because you have not tried it yet. Give it a try.
Well, we hear what you say, that we in the West keep information in our heads. How can we get out of our heads? What methods can we use? And will the willpower help?
No. Willpower will not help you. Really, willpower is not a power at all. Because will depends on the ego. A very tiny phenomena. It cannot create much power. When you are will-less, then you are powerful. Because then you are one with the whole. Deep down, willpower is a sort of impotency to hide the fact that I am impotent. We create will. We create the opposite to deceive ourselves and others. Persons who feel they are foolish try to show that they are wise. And they are constantly alert that they are foolish. So they do everything to look wise. Persons who are ugly, or feel they are ugly, always try to beautify themselves. Even a painted beauty, just a face, a mask. People who are weak always try to look strong. The opposite is created. That's the only way how to hide the reality within. A Hitler is a weakling. That's why he creates so much willpower around, just to hide the fact. A person who is really strong will be unaware that he is strong. His strength will be flowing. It will be there. But he will not be even conscious about it, says Lao Tse. A man of real virtue never knows that he is virtuous. A man who is really moral is never aware that he is moral. But a man who is aware that he is moral has deep down immorality hidden. A man who thinks he is good, saintly, a sage, is a sinner. And he knows it. And just to hide the fact, he creates the opposite. Willpower is really not power but weakness. A really powerful man has no will of his own. The whole is his will. He floats like a white cloud, one with the existence, in tune with it. Your will always create conflict. It will shrink you, make you an island, and then the struggle starts. A will-less person will be naturally headless. And remember, you cannot get out of your head. You can cut it. And that is easier. Getting out of it is almost impossible. Because even this concept of getting out is part of it. The head is a mess. It is a chaos. You think and you think against thinking also. The other thinking, which is against thinking, is also thinking. You are not moving out of it. You can condemn your thoughts, but this condemning is a thought again. Nothing has been achieved. You are moving in a vicious circle. You can go on moving, but you will not be out. So what to do? How to get out of the head? Only one thing is possible. Don't create any fight inside, and don't create any effort to come out, because every effort will be self-suicidal. What can be done then? Simply watch. Be in and watch. Don't try to get out. Be in and watch. And if you can watch, in those moments of watchfulness, there will be no head. Suddenly you will be beyond, not out, beyond. Suddenly you will be hovering beyond yourself. There is one Zen story. Very absurd, as all Zen stories are. But they have to be absurd because life is such. They depict life as it is. One Zen master used to ask his disciples that in a bottle I have put a goose. Now the goose has grown and the neck of the bottle is very small, so the goose cannot come out. And the bottle is very precious and I don't want to break it. And now there is crisis. If the goose is not allowed out, she will die. I can break the bottle and the goose can be out, but I don't want to break the bottle. The bottle is precious. And I don't want to kill the goose also. So what you will do? This is the problem. The goose in the head and the neck is very narrow. You can break the head, but it is precious. Or you can let the goose die, but that too cannot be allowed. Because you are the goose. And that old Zen master continued asking disciples and beating them and saying them, find out a way because time is not there. And only once he allowed the answer. One disciple said, the goose is out. Many answers were tried and he will always beat the person. He will say no. Because somebody will say that something we will do with the bottle, but again the master will say the bottle will be broken or something will go wrong and that cannot be allowed. Or somebody will say let the goose die if the bottle is so precious. These were the only two ways, there was no other way. And the master won't allow any other clue. But to this disciple he bowed down and touched his feet. And he says, he is right, the goose is out. It has never been in. You are out. You have never been in. The feeling that you are in is just a false conception. So there is no real problem how to bring you out of your head. Just watch. When you watch, what happens? The phenomena of watching. Just close your eyes and watch the thoughts. What happens? Thoughts are there in, but you are not in. The watcher is always beyond. The watcher is always standing on the hill. And everything moves around and around and the watcher is beyond. The watcher can never be the in. Can never be the insider. It is always out. Watching means to be out. You may call it witnessing. Awareness, mindfulness, or whatsoever you choose to call it. But the secret is watch. So whenever you feel the head is too much, just sit under a tree and watch and don't try to come out. Who will come out? No one has been in. The whole effort is futile because if you have never been in, then how you can come out? And you may go on trying and trying and getting involved in it. You may get mad, but you will never be out. Once you know that in a moment of watchfulness, you are beyond, transcending, you are out. And from that moment you will be headless. The head belongs to the body, not to you. The head is part of the body. It belongs to the body. It has a function in the body. It is beautiful. It is good. The bottle is precious. And if you know the way, the secrets of it, it can be used. When I am talking to you, what I am doing? Using the bottles. When Buddha is preaching, what he is doing? Using the bottles. The bottle is really precious, worth preserving. But this is no way to preserve it, to get into it, and then get caught into it, and then make efforts to come out, and then the whole life becomes a chaos. Once you know that watching, you are out. You become headless. Then you move on this earth without any head. What a beautiful phenomena, a man moving without head. That's what I mean when I say become a white cloud, a headless phenomena. You cannot even imagine how much silence can descend upon you when the head is not there. Your this head, physical head, will be there, but the involvement, the obsession is not there. This head is not a problem. This is beautiful. A wonderful device. The greatest computer yet invented. Such a complex, such an efficient mechanism. It is beautiful. It can be used. You can enjoy it using. But from where you have got the idea that you are in it, just seems to be a false teaching. You may not be aware, in old Japan, and still, old people in Japan, if you ask them, where do you think, they will sew to their belly. Because in Japan it was taught that the belly is the center of thinking. So when for the first time Europeans reached Japan, they couldn't believe that the whole country thinks that the head is in the belly, not in the head. This is just a Western attitude that you are in the head. Japanese worked and that thing helped. They worked well with the belly. And if you think, where are you thinking, they will sew to their belly. But now, they are shifting from the belly to the head. There have been other traditions, Taoist tradition. And Lao Tzu says, you think from the sole of your feet. So there are techniques in Taoist yoga, how to get out of your souls, because there the thinking is going on. What is the reality? The reality is you are beyond. But you can get attached to any part of the body. The head is a Western obsession. The belly was the Eastern obsession. You must have heard about D.H. Lawrence. He used to think that one thinks from the sex center. And that is the real thinking center, nowhere else. And all are equal, equally wrong or equally right. There is nothing to choose. Because the witness is beyond. It is all around the body and beyond the body. You can get attached to any part of the body and start thinking that this is the part. There is no need to come out because you have been never in. The goose is out, already out. watch. And when you watch, you have to remember that while watching, don't judge. If you judge, watching is lost. While watching, don't evaluate. If you evaluate, watching is lost. While watching, don't comment. If you comment, you have missed the point. While watching, just watch a river flowing, the stream of consciousness flowing, atomic thoughts floating like bubbles, and you sitting on the bank watching. The stream goes on and on and on, and you don't say this is good, you don't say this is bad, and you don't say this should not have been, and you don't say this should have been. You don't say anything, you simply watch. You are not asked to comment. You are not a judge. Just a watcher. Then see what happens. Watching the river, suddenly you will be beyond and the goose will be out. And once you notice that you are out, you can remain out. And then you can move on this earth without a head. So, this is the way how to cut the head. Everybody is interested in cutting others' heads. That won't help. You have already done that too much. Cut your own. To be headless is to be in deep meditation. Enough?